I've been reading a series of detective novels over the last few weeks. The Rockford Public Library has the whole set for electronic checkout, so I read them on my phone. I love the structure of a good detective story. There's a problem in these books, a murder, and then the hero, who has many flaws, tries to solve it. Twists and turns and surprises, and then at the end, an answer. And yet, the crime still happened. These novels are set in Los Angeles, beginning in the late 1980s and running up through the current day. I've been to LA a few times over the years, but I don't know the city well. So I find myself looking up maps to see where the places are and what road the detective is on and where that intersection is and so forth. I like geography, so to explore. And he writes of the gritty city under the glam, of course. It's a trope in a detective novel, but a real one. And you see the city change from the devastation before and after the 1992 riots, the divide in the city, the churn of new people, and the rehabilitation of certain neighborhoods, which still leaves some behind. You get a feel for the city. In the beginning of this set of novels, the detective has more murders to solve than there's time. If you don't solve it in 3 days, you move on to the next one. By the end, the number has shrunk so much that he's working cold cases. The city changes. I wrote this earlier this week, and of course I read the news last night and this morning of 3 murders in Rockford on a bus people were celebrating together. So I want to hold those who died and the loved ones in our thoughts and our prayers. What tragedy. Cities change, and yet they don't go away. This city, the Los Angeles the detective is writing about, improves in many ways, but in other ways things don't change. Richard Florida, the author of our first reading, writes about cities he has for decades. His best-known work is called The Creative Class. Maybe some of you have heard of that book. Years ago, it helped spur cities across the country to make investments to attract young professionals and others. He recommended things like river walks, farmers markets, walkable downtowns, investments in the art, and creative spaces where innovators could work side by side. Any of that sound familiar? People read the book and then they did what he said, or they tried. Youngstown, Toledo, Kalamazoo, Peoria. What do these places have in common? They are fairly similar to Rockford, Illinois. Sometimes it is the minister's job to say to people, you are special and unique. But sometimes it is our job to say, you are not that different from anyone else. We are not Los Angeles or Youngstown, but some of the trends and the things that happen there happen here too. The national, even international forces that affect life affect us. This is the 7th city that I've lived in. They're all unique, but none of them are as unique as they think they are. Knowing the history of a place, its unique character and story, is very important. Loving a particular place, the way the gardens bloom together, the little hole-in-the-wall taco place that you just can't resist, the night out at the symphony, the way you see the mayor at a parade or your teacher at the grocery store. But we are buffeted by forces beyond our control. And there are things which are just true everywhere. So as we think about Rockford's resurrection, indeed the whole region, not just the city limits, for we are bound together, we really are. As we think about this, I want us to hold the mix of universal and particular. To think about our particular issues, but also to remember that we are not that unique. I've been here 10 years. That's a long time. When I first came to visit, thinking about coming here, Dave Black, who was on the search committee, drove me around town. And Dave's still on vacation, but he knows I was going to tell this story. I've told it before. We started at the Hilton Garden Inn on the far east side, and we did the whole east side, east state, big box thing all the way in. And then we went by the brand new jail. It was brand new 10 years ago. We toured around southwest Rockford for a while. He wandered, and I did too, to see the real city. 10 years ago, there was no Friday City Market. If you wanted to eat downtown, there was the Irish Rose, and that was about it. There was no Prairie Street Brewhouse, no federal courthouse, no conservatory. The school district was on, what, the 15th superintendent in 16 years at that point? Yet I came for the same reason that people relocated back to Youngstown in that survey, because there was a sense of place and a sense of purpose. I could be a medium-sized fish in a small pond. I lived in places where I didn't know my neighbors, and I didn't want that. Places where people disappear into their identical tan-colored homes. In Colorado Springs, there were whole hillsides of identical tan-colored homes, all the same builder, the same color. No. I like gritty. I like creativity that comes from effort. I like potential. And 10 years ago, it felt like people in this town stared into the abyss. What would happen if things continued as they were, if we just gave up? If the inner core continued to be neglected, if the schools continued to lose people, if we continued to be disconnected and disengaged? And they said, no. They said, we shall save our place. We shall transform it and resurrect it. It happened at the city when the mayor and others sat at the Irish Rose and plotted a comeback based on the river. I think they read Richard Florida's book. Said, we'll do that. It happened at the school district where people like Lori Priest and others got people around the table to say, how can we help instead of what's wrong? A very different question. It happened at the park district and the airport and small and medium businesses. It happened when Heartland Church mobilized thousands of volunteers. I was part of that some years. It's amazing. It happened when the housing authority said, we're not okay with this anymore, warehousing people in one place. And it happened in hundreds of little places across the city. People said, we don't give up. We're not going to walk away. And just as they said that, 9 years ago, the national economy crashed. We got hammered. This is what happened. Put this together. That top number is unemployment. 2008, 2010, now. And that's 17%. It's probably worse than that. The bottom number is median housing prices. We're not back yet. We're still climbing out of that hole. The birth of a stronger city isn't finished. It's ongoing. There's a lot of work to do. A lot of work to do. We've had setbacks, and some of what we've done has been easier than some of what remains. But think how far we have come. In just the 10 years that I've been here, I think about restaurants and parks and markets and sports factories and places where people gather. I think about education a lot. That's something I work on, and a lot of you do too. We're not there yet, and we're not moving fast enough. But there is a sense of purpose and possibility. Everything from investments in early childhood to the Rockford Promise Area effort to boost college attainment, something we've been part of. I think about jobs and about how much better things are. In fact, as an employer, I can testify that the labor market is tighter than it was. Next year's budget at the church will call for higher pay for our people, which is good news, and I hope that you can help make that happen. And I hope that for many of you, your wages might be up too. Wouldn't it be great if that was true for everyone? But it's happening. Come a long way. I'm proud of the contributing role that I played in some of those efforts and the role that many of you have played in those efforts. You show up. You lead causes. You join them. You are part of the rebirth of this region. How many times am I in a meeting and folks say, oh, do you know so-and-so? They're fabulous. And we'll get in a lot of you. And I say, oh, yeah, they're a member of the congregation that I get to serve. The Rockford region, like all places, is at its best when many people do many things. And we are at our worst when we look for a single hero to save us. The boy starts to make the city more green. But if he was the only gardener, it wouldn't happen. The magic isn't that he starts to care. The magic is when others become part of the story. In the musical response, the choir sang, "We are builders of that city. All our joys and all our groans help to rear its shining ramparts. All our lives are building stones." All of us are builders. And we can build that beautiful city not of angels, but of people. When your trust is all but shattered, when your faith is all but killed, you can give up, bitter and battered, or you can slowly start to build the beautiful city, which requires all of us. Whether you live in the city or not, the fact that you are here means that you are invested in this place and in this region, a city of people, not of angels. Don't think that this sermon isn't theological. Unitarian Universalists believe in this world, and we don't worry too much about the next one, if there is. We believe in human goodness and potential. We believe that democracy and civic participation actualizes our commitment to the sacredness of each person. We all have a role to play. So, and we don't look for saviors. We are the saviors, each and every one, and people in and out of this room. Every night a child is born is a holy night, right? So it's up to us to do the work, all of us, for all the people in a place. And reflecting on how far we've come and what's next in the rebirth of this place, this is my first and most important suggestion for the next work. More people need to engage. People who've been excluded, who don't trust, who don't have access to the networks of power and authority. People who didn't go to Boylan. People who don't read the newspaper. People who aren't taken seriously. People who don't trust the process. People who don't show up. Folks need to engage, and those who do engage more often need to do more to build sustainably over time, not a one-shot deal, trust with those who have seen promises broken so many times. The votes against home rule were concentrated where? Not in the anti-tax Northeast, but in the low trust Southwest, where people don't believe what they read because for decades, centuries, most of the promises that have been made have been broken. This is about race, and it is also about class. It's mostly about power and who has it. It's not so much about corruption per se as it is about how this town is built on relationships and not organizations. And if you're not in the know, you're not known. Over the years, I've tried a few times with some of you to create sustainable organizations of groups, interfaith bodies, community organizations, and so on and so forth, and have been almost always rebuffed. Folks aren't interested. For a while, I took it personally. I thought it was me, but I realized that's not the case. I think it's because the lack of structure means that people who are rich in the currency of relationships keep their wealth. Richard Florida wrote about how even returners experience the insular nature and closed loop of these places. And I'll say that even after 10 years here, I sometimes feel like an outsider. I didn't go to Boylan. I wonder what would happen if the town gave a little more authority to those of us who've chosen to move here from somewhere else. Maybe our contribution might be useful. A similar but different piece of this structure of power of inclusion and exclusion is that we need to grapple with the continuing exodus of the Black middle class from this town. Getting black college graduates to move here or stay here is very difficult. And perhaps we should ask why. Perhaps UTC and Woodward and other large employers need to ask why. Some of the histories there are not so great. Perhaps the trade unions need to get real about how exclusive they have historically been and what it might mean to really change that. Perhaps the school district needs to get serious about who they hire and even be willing to pay a hiring bonus to black teachers. Because I'll tell you that other school districts look at the numbers of the difference it makes for a student to have a teacher of the same color, and they do pay a hiring bonus, but we don't. You know, I went to the symphony last night. I saw a lot of you there. I don't go very often, but Leah was at a sleepover, so it was just Rosie. She's 11. But let's do it. We went. She enjoyed it. So did I. It was great. I saw some of you there. I saw one of you performing, and it was beautiful. The conductor felt the need to explain at one point in the service why they had done pieces by Scott Joplin, an African-American composer. The first act had been dances and then a more serious classical piece from one era, and the second part was first dances and then the more classical piece. I didn't need an explanation, but he felt the need to give one. And I did hear people behind me sort of whisper and talk during the Joplin piece, why is this here? That's an interesting question to wonder about. This is a racist town. Every black person I know in Rockford will tell you that's true, and I believe what they say. And it's also not unique. Remember that we're not that special. Most industrial towns in the North have similar dynamics. Ours is particular to us, and in some ways particularly bad. In some ways it feels 20 years behind, a little slow to catch up. That doesn't just go away with time. There's no inevitability about that. If the election taught us anything, it's that there's no inevitability about racial progress. You have to work. You have to change everything. The way you permit construction, the way you hire, the way you teach, the way you invite, the way you patrol, everything. On this, most of our leaders talk pretty well, but I worry about urgency and commitment. Talk is cheap. Follow through is what's needed. When you've been promised justice and given less than that for generations, more promises are not going to cut it. If Rockford is to continue its rebirth, it must deal with the questions of race and power and inclusion and the seductive exclusion of deciding things based on who you already know. This is the main question. There's plenty more, a long to-do list, the train to Chicago, please. More redevelopment in the city core and West Sprawl, making this place a friendly place for immigrants, including those who start businesses, a big driver of revitalization. Working with allies across the state to try to move away from property taxes in terms of the way we fund our schools. I'd say fix potholes. But I think with our weather, that what Jesus said about the poor is true for potholes for us. They will always be with you. Keep it working, making things pedestrian and bike friendly. We saw the new Lime bikes out last night. Wanted to use two, but you can only do one at a time with the app, so I couldn't get one for me and Rosie, but they're working on that feature. Build that beautiful new public library downtown that also might be a public gathering space. The place on the river, open the hotel, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We know what to do. We have a long list. That's not the issue. But we need a city of people, not angels, of everyone, not some. A beautiful city made by all of our lives, not some. With all of our colors and shapes and stories, not some. That's what I believe in and what I'll try to work for and what I hope you will come along with on that journey, and build with all of us the city that we love. For sometimes, now and in the future yet to come, we might stand under a tree and hear, yes, the sounds of traffic and people and the wind rustle through the leaves all at once. and know that this is our home, and sing our thanks and praise for this life and this world and this place and the work that is yet always before us. Let us rise in body or spirit and sing together for all that is our life.